It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast. All right, and thank you for tuning in once again to the It's Going Down podcast. We have several people that are in so-called Virginia. We're going to be talking about the ongoing and exploding pipeline battles that are happening both in Virginia and also West Virginia, the growing amount of tree sits and encampments that are blockading both the Atlantic Coast Pipeline and the Mountain Valley Pipeline and just everything that's happening on the ground. And we have several guests here today. If you can just introduce yourselves real quick and just say however you want to be introduced, where you're at, or whatever else you want to introduce yourself as.
Alrighty. Hey, my name is Judy. I demand she, her, hers pronouns. I'm calling in from Little Teal Crossing, a family farm outside of Roanoke, resisting the Mountain Valley Pipeline.
And I am Jay. I also use she, her, hers pronouns. And I am currently at Three Sisters Resistance Camp in Buckingham, Virginia.
I'm Jordan. I'm currently located in the city of Richmond.
All right. Can we all just map out exactly what are all the places of resistance that's happening right now on both sides of the line between Virginia and West Virginia? There's, as far as we know, there's 8 people that are up in the trees right now. Is that correct? And then as well as what's happening at Three Sisters?
That's correct. So in so-called West Virginia, there are 2 sits up on Peters Mountain at the bore site for the Mountain Valley Pipeline. And then directly adjacent to that, in Giles County, Virginia, is the Monopod site, which is on Pocahontas Road, an access road that the Forest Service and Mountain Valley Pipeline use for vehicular access to the bore site. And so that monopod is preventing both workers from getting anything done and also the Forest Service that would need vehicles to attempt extraction. And in Virginia, on Bent Mountain, the Terry family, Red and her daughter Minor, on their own land, on their family orchard, are each in a tree sit directly in the easement, directly in the right-of-way for the Mountain Valley Pipeline. And lastly, Little Teal Crossing, there are 3 tree sits that are in the path of the Mountain Valley Pipeline on a small family farm, like I said, outside of Roanoke, so-called Virginia. Yeah, so a lot happening. Mm-hmm. A lot happening at once for MVP.
For sure. And currently on the ACP route, Three Sisters Resistance Camp is sitting in the path of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline in Buckingham, Virginia. And we've been here since January resisting on the grounds. We've chosen the current tactic of a static encampment. It's seeming to have been like pretty effective thus far. We're just out here trying to resist as best we can, thinking through like a lot of things that are intentional about what it looks like to resist and what it looks like to like build a world without fossil fuel infrastructure. A lot of that political education work happens at our camp. We oftentimes have a lot of different scale up things that happen here right now. And we're currently gearing up for like the point at which we are going to have interface, more interface with Dominion and the state here. So lots of things happening as well.
So I think the first question some people have is, it seems that there has been some sort of deadlines that have been passed. For instance, I think it was in late March, like March 31st, they were supposed to have stopped cutting some of the trees. But it seems like they have continued to do so. Can you just kind of speak to that? Like, has the encampment managed to block anything, or are they just saying fuck it and they're just continuing to do whatever they want to do?
So specifically on the ACP route, the land that we are sitting on, Dominion has not sent surveyors or security since January when we first arrived. There has been heavy state surveillance and Dominion surveillance, low-flying helicopters and planes, infrared like technology being used to see how many people are at camp, and different like scare tactics. The state police oftentimes like follow us around depending on like where we are. So those types of like surveillance things have happened, but ACP has not cut any trees on this land. So the static encampment tactic has been working. They know we're here. They know we've been here, and they've been staying away for the most part. I think they're just trying to right now wait us out. We're not going anywhere, but that seems to be what we're thinking. So yeah.
Are the state police, are they saying anything to you all, or are they just monitoring?
It seems like the interfaces with state police, there have been a couple where there have been questions to some of our people. What are you doing down here? How many people are in camp? And those different types of probing questions that the state oftentimes likes to ask. Oftentimes, like, it's intimidation tactics. A lot of... you know, you aren't supposed to be here, or like threatening with trespassing or what have you. So those things have been happening. The state has been, I think, trying to like just keep tabs basically on what's happening here. And so we've been vigilant in like trying to keep our people safe.
Well, I was just curious if we could turn now towards this started with these tree sits, and then other people that were around the area that had land, they had houses, and then they began to get into the trees. Mm-hmm. Did those relationships, were those built before all of this started, or this happened during the start of the struggle, or it was a combination of both?
Yeah, I think a combination of both. I think that with Mountain Valley Pipeline specifically, with the landowner struggle, it was different, because there were 300 landowners who refused to sign easements. And then Mountain Valley Pipeline also chose to engage in the court process with all of those landowners at once. So pretty unprecedented to sue 300 landowners at one time. And so with that, there were a lot of events for the pipeline or the state that were necessary in those processes that helped a lot of landowners build relationship, whether that was like with supporters or with one another. And so that has been interesting to see the way that like the state and the company will bring folks together. And then that time is used to kind of scheme and organize. But as far as the network of sitters, like these are things that have kind of popped up following the initial Peters Mountain stand. Because of various timelines, you know, things were different. And that question about timelines has actually been really confusing and challenging for folks resisting the Mountain Valley Pipeline. Because, like you said, initially, tree cutting was supposed to stop March 31st because of federally protected migratory birds and bats. But then as that date approached, we saw FERC extend it and just say, oh, well, they have to have a biologist on site to verify that trees are not housing these federally protected species. And so with that, we especially saw cutting in Bent Mountain after that deadline, which is when the Terry family took to the trees. And then in in Franklin County, where Little Teal Crossing is, cutting was happening all around Franklin County. And then when Mountain Valley Pipeline began to move in, that is when the sitters also went up. And so those occupations have been kind of staggered, really based on those timelines. And so I think that something that we've struggled with in that is like both the hurry up and wait of like figuring out when is the moment, and also struggling because, you know, FERC just keeps changing the rules. The state just keeps changing the rules to service Mountain Valley Pipeline. And so that has been really challenging, I think, for us.
And it's also, I think I just want to speak a little bit to what's been happening with the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, because Dominion applied for an extension from FERC to continue cutting past the deadline, because it applies here as well for the migratory bats and birds, and FERC denied them that that just blanket like continuance to cut permit. And so that has affected our timeline in that like we have a little bit more wiggle room here to really like figure out like what strategy is going to look like, and like also continue to like be vigilant against like Dominion in a lot of different ways. So it's interesting how they are playing off of each other in these ways.
I kind of wanted to get everybody's take on this. Jordan, this goes to you as well, watching these things unfold. But you know, there was a recent mini documentary that Unicorn Riot just put out, and they like interviewed a teacher, and she was talking about how, you know, the students in her class were jealous of the people that were able to go up in the trees and find stuff. It's very moving. I teared up a little bit. I'm not ashamed to admit it. It was very moving, very inspiring. But I mean, when you all hear that, I mean, what goes through your head? I'm just curious if you can just talk a little bit about, you know, all the people that are coming together to support this. And it's, I mean, we're going to talk about how even like some politicians are supporting this stuff in a minute. But if you can just kind of like explain to people that are not from the area, the degree in which, or the scope in which support is behind you all doing these types of things. If you can just talk about that.
With, you know, so-called West Virginia, and specifically it was like really beautiful timing as the West Virginia teacher strike really began while the Peters Mountain Stand was being prepared and then being occupied full time. So we have begun to like build relation with and like get a lot of support from West Virginia teachers. And then also something that I've heard from folks who've been organizing in West Virginia a lot longer than I have is that when they were really fighting coal, much more intensely, there was a lot of community backlash because a lot of folks in so-called West Virginia saw coal as bringing prosperity and wealth to their community. And so fighting that, you know, there's a lot of Friends of Coal and other groups that were challenging that resistance. So they were kind of getting it from three sides, you know, like the companies and the state and now locals employed by the coal industry. But with Mountain Valley Pipeline, specifically, something that they've like highlighted is that that's not really the case. There's massive, massive community support that comes out to support either at the monopod, or like folks will hike up Peters Mountain just to like drop something off or say hello. And with Red as well, I think is really largely it's appealing to a much larger audience. And I think that a lot of that is because of whiteness that's happening in that space. But, you know, a 61-year-old woman defending her own land is something that even like quote unquote moderates or people that were not willing to show up or donate or bring supplies or make a phone call on behalf of pipeline fighters are now becoming more willing to do that. And something that I'm seeing is like kind of that as a gateway to understanding direct action and kind of understanding a larger politic for collective liberation that is starting with something that is about landowner rights, that is about eminent domain. And so when there are folks who are working really hard to get away from that and to make the struggle about no pipelines at all, no pipelines anywhere, and not just because it's coming through your backyard, I think that it is more accessible for folks. More folks are getting exposed to that politic because of these things that to them are not as radical, like a woman, a 61-year-old woman defending her land. But then what they get exposed to is a much larger and more radical politic that does center direct action and mutual aid in a way that they haven't been exposed to before.
I think that a little bit speaks to the difference of the way that the kind of political climate of Virginia and what it has been in the past. I think in the past, speaking as someone up here and been attempting to organize here for around 10 years, there's been this like big cultural shift both in Virginia and nationally around direct action and the more like, for lack of a better word, like average person or like person that's not really connected to like activist or political organizing communities. And just like a general openness to direct action. But it does feel like when you see that happening in Virginia, it feels like a big thing. Like the fight against the ACP has been going on for at least 4 years. And people's reactions to very simple direct actions, like there was a couple of years ago, there was a blockade of the Dominion, of one of the Dominion buildings here. It was like a soft blockade here in Richmond, and didn't get nearly the amount of more like broad-based support from beyond the usual suspects than what we're seeing now with these tree sits and particularly Reds. And I think it speaks to how the political climate of Virginia is interplaying with the national political climate and people's like general openness to direct action, as well as just the solid community organizing and building of networks that has happened over the last 4 years against the ACP and the MVP. I also want to like just put that out there. People have been doing like hard work, driving hours and hours all the time every week to meet with folks and get people together and get people like get all those conversations started way ahead of any sort of imminent threat of the pipeline, any work around the pipeline coming through any particular piece of land.
In the community of Buckingham, that like might not have had like the best connotation of direct action, like opening up these like avenues for them to get to know us as folks that are pipeline resistors, and also like being able to like have these very deep conversations about like what direct action is and sort of like changing folks' minds about this tactic and this like way of thinking has been work that like we take very seriously here on the ACP route, and it seems to be like being very effective. A lot of folks are like really warming up to the idea of direct action and like what it could look like, and being like less fearful of the implications of it. So that's great.
I find it fascinating, this idea that you all are talking about in terms of the West Virginia teacher strike opening up either dialogue or just an acceptance of certain tactics or even just a willingness to fight. I find that interesting. If anybody else has any comments on those two connections.
Yeah, just something that I want to like be sure to clarify is that the teacher strike is just like a piece, and not to be reductive, but a piece in like a very long history of direct action resistance in Appalachia, specifically in West Virginia, with like labor strikes at Blair Mountain or other direct action against coal. And so with the teacher strike, I think it was also kind of bringing up something that is a really big piece of Appalachian history that also helped prime the community for Peters Mountain. I don't think that the community support in West Virginia around Peters Mountain would have been nearly as great and quick in how effectively community members rallied around Peters Mountain and wanted to get involved in the myriad of ways that they were willing and able to do so. Like because of the teacher strike, folks were ready to roll out for that. And that also included folks that hadn't done direct action in that way before, who then were exposed to that feeling of collective power that was happening in West Virginia, who were then, you know, exposed to that and wanted to participate and wanted more of that. And were also like becoming aware of the ways that communities can be born out of these actions, like with teachers who were then coming out to Peters Mountain, who were also then making demands about the pipeline, who were making anti-pipeline demands in their teacher strike actions. And so that was really incredible to see, I think, as far as like really helping us build momentum and kind of collect folks who were wanting to continue to throw down and who did want more.
You know, one thing that was brought up before, people brought up Charlottesville and the anti-fascist resistance there and just how much that weighs on people's minds. We were kind of joking about something that an ex-Breitbart writer had written about resistance to pipelines in this area, you know, talking about, quote, being Antifa. But I'm just curious, just those connections in people's minds. And you all have been talking about how people have kind of like come around and like, you know, seen past any sort of like stuff that the media would throw in front of them to really get to know other people. But I'm just curious if we can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I could say a little bit about that. I mean, I think that what I said before about the changing sort of political climate nationally and people's openness to direct action since everything from Occupy to Black Lives Matter, and anti-police uprisings, and then into the like the Trump era or whatever of like pushing back against the alt-right, and Standing Rock, of course. I think that Virginians in particular, and people that reside in Virginia and the surrounding region, have a particularly visceral, like fresh relationship to like big and confrontational direct action regarding the activity of the alt-right in Charlottesville and the violence that came down on Charlottesville and the resistance to it. And I think that just in terms of like the kind of the public consciousness or whatever is still very fresh for a lot of people that live here, and definitely a lot of people that live in Virginia were either in Charlottesville or knew people that were in Charlottesville. So I think that's something that is just kind of inescapable. And I think that, many people that cared about what happened in Charlottesville also care about, these pipelines. I mean, Charlottesville itself isn't even that far from a lot of the, what would be very directly affected, areas if any of these pipelines were to explode. So many of the same people that faced off with fascists in Charlottesville are also concerned and figuring out how to face off with these pipeline companies. And I think that they are very concretely real, similar struggles to a lot of people here.
For sure. I can speak a little bit on that. I think that the one thing, first of all, Green Antifa is hilarious. How the media like really try to like paint this picture of folks. They're not entirely wrong, but whatever. I think that what for me like connects like the two is not just that like a lot of folks like rolled through to Charlottesville, myself included, but that the pipeline fight or like resistance to pipelines is so intrinsically linked to me to resistance to white supremacy and to settler colonialism, and being able to like make those connections in my work is very important. And like every day, like constantly, like, you know, thinking through it and like talking to folks about it and like educating myself on it more and how much it informs like how I choose to resist is really like what like jumps out at me when I think about those two things specifically.
I think that Jay can probably speak to this really well also, but specifically with like media surrounding balaclavas, we do get a lot of pushback from community members and folks on Facebook. And Something that's been really interesting is to see where the people in the tree sits who are, of course, masked up at all times, who are really involved in social media posting, like who will just like write something or record a video talking about their day or talking about their experience, has really helped control that kind of negative sentiment towards people concealing their identities, which of course, like, we also have to do the work of engaging with folks and explaining to them that that's a practice that keeps us safe in this work specifically. Yeah, and I don't know if you have anything that you want to add to that.
Yeah, just that I know that Three Sisters Resistance Camp, we on our Twitter, like, oftentimes put out like videos. We had one where we were masked up and we were just like dancing along to like an early 90s like pop song in an effort to sort of like humanize ourselves within this. And in all of our solidarity posts, we've had solidarity posts with Afrin and with the Zod. And in all of those, like, our people are masked up in an effort to, again, like, continue to, like, break down this narrative that, like, masking up is something that is, like, automatically means that you are dangerous. And so I think that that has been, like, really helpful. Those are the things that, like, folks really resonate with. They really enjoy them. I think it's, like, helping to, like, create, like, a different narrative around that. And that is very helpful for us as well over here in Buckingham.
Yeah, if you go on the social media pages you all are running, especially on Facebook, you'll see a lot of locals, I mean, just, you know, putting praise up, just saying thank you for being there, thank you for doing what you're doing. And, you know, there's a lot of shares, and you can tell that local people are really sharing sharing this media, you know, and there's a lot of updates, and we'll link to this in the show notes, but if you, you know, there's updates coming out of these camps and tree sits every day. But I was just curious if we could turn to the camp resisting the ACP specifically, and if we can just talk about, you know, what does daily life look like there? I mean, and you mentioned these videos, which are great, and there's lots of beautiful banners up. But just, you know, what is day-to-day operations at the camp? What does that all look like?
For sure. I think that initially, like, when we got out here, it was in the dead of winter and freezing cold. So we, like, focused a lot on, like, just surviving and resisting during the winter. Day-to-day looks like usually folks are up right around 8 a.m., we don't have any electricity out here. We do have a solar panel. So depending on what the weather was like, uncovering the solar panel to be able to catch those rays is very important to us. And being able to get the wood stove going so that we can have some heat. And we use the wood stove also to cook meals and warm water for doing dishes. We're like really trying to like be intentional about like using what's around us. There are a lot of like dead trees in the woods that we're in. And so like collecting firewood is a daily task for us. We have different folks that like do kitchen duty. So cooking the meals for folks that are here. And dish duty, obviously, because everyone wants a revolution, but no one wants to do the dishes, right?
say that.
Like, thinking through, like, you know, just, like, a daily schedule. We have, generally, like, folks are pretty free to do what it is that, like, feels good to them. So we've had different projects and work days that folks engage in, whether that's like art projects, like making banners, making patches for different things. Or if folks want to, you know, build a barricade, that's also a thing. and yeah, like it's generally just like also scouting the area. There's a lot of acres and a lot of acreage to cover. And so making sure that like they're, you know, we are keeping each other safe. We try to keep folks scouting in pairs of two. And that happens every day. And, you know, just like, again, a lot of political education things are happening it's a really like sustenance camp, you know, like, so everything that we do it because we need to. But I think that we're like doing an amazing job out here, resisting, and just that it's something that really, like, being out in nature and like knowing that like you're so close to the trees and you're so close to, the critters and the animals. It really like just helps me to like double down on like, you know, what I believe and like continuing to be out here.
Radical Underground is a podcast that connects underground music with radical politics from around the world. So if you like anarchy and good music about kicking fascists in the face, check us out on Channel Zero, SoundCloud, iTunes, and anywhere else you can find us.
Sick of your right-wing bullshit, it's a fucking disgrace. So let the vegan persuading, kicking you in the face.
How can we imagine a world beyond prisons and police, borders and surveillance?
Rust Belt Abolition Radio is an abolitionist media and movement building project based in Detroit, Michigan.
Each monthly episode amplifies the voices of those impacted by mass incarceration and explores ongoing work in the movement to abolish the carceral state and racial capitalism.
Tune in to Rust Belt Abolition Radio here on the Channel Zero Network and visit www.rustbeltradio.org to learn more.
In the eyes of the government, we are the enemy.
In a world where there is no government, anarchy rules. This summer, get ready for the most action-packed podcast.
We continue fighting because we hate all authority and love freedom, which cannot be given, but must be taken.
Such zines as This Is Not a Dialogue, A Crime Called Freedom, Party's Over, and many, many more.
For more text and audio material of interest to anarchists,
check out ResonanceAudioDistro.org.
So in terms of the tree sits, I think a lot of people got to ask, how do you go to the bathroom? And just the people that are up in the trees also too, just if you're sitting up there for, you know, weeks on end, how do you keep your muscles from just either, you know, going to shit or, you know, how do people just maintain up there for so long?
Mm-hmm. When Appalachians Against Pipelines first, the page first went up on Facebook, that was the number one question we got. It's like, where do they poop? And our answer was always, in buckets, would you like to come put them in a hole? most people said no, believe it or not. But yeah, pee in a jar, poop in a bucket. And then, of course, like, there are nearby sites and other practices that we use to keep that safe. And as far as exercise, you know, it depends on the site of resistance. It depends because obviously, depending on the trees, both in structure and like kind of tree, they can sustain different sizes of platforms. And so for some of the platforms, exercising isn't a problem. But for other spots, like, really want to shout out the monopod in this situation, which is definitely the smallest of any of the structures that people are suspended on, and is also one of the tallest. And I think that, you know, that person had no expectation of being 53 feet up in the air for 25 days, which is just like an incredible victory. But they're doing great and the morale is really high. They directly post on Appalachians Against Pipelines. So you can see exactly how they're doing right from their mouth. But yeah, I think that there's a lot of also like psychic discipline that has to happen, which is another reason why it's so helpful. Something I've heard from sitters is that it's really helpful to have like direct access to media, to be able to interact with folks and get support, because it does get really lonely. People do a lot of reading, they do a lot of writing, but it also depends on the space, because Peters Mountain and the Monopod and Bent Mountain are all under 24-hour private security and or Forest Service and or county police surveillance. That's day and night. There are always, the state is always present or the company is always present. And so what used to be a situation is folks could just swing by to the bottom of the sit and just holler up, whether that's media or just like people that want to come and be supportive. And that's no longer the case, for Peters Mountain and the Monopod. But it is like a little different for Red and Minor, on Bent Mountain, where that is still true, but it is a much more accessible, you know, there's not miles of hiking that has to happen to get to those sits. And there, the way that the police line is shaped, you can still holler up because those sits are closer to the ground. And so, yeah, it's very different based on experience, but since the 24-hour, you know, shining the floodlights and not letting anybody get close, it has, I think, been a lot more emotionally taxing and lonely for folks that are sitting. That's the thing I hear most about, is not really the physical fatigue, but more of the emotional fatigue.
Do you all just want to talk a little bit about the Monopod itself? I think some people might not understand.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So the Monopod is a felled tree that was reclaimed that supports itself by a 2 to 3 to 5 foot hole in the ground, depending on what you're working with, that is in the center of the access road, that is then rigged to nearby trees and the gate that it is forcing closed. So it supports itself via all the other nearby trees as well as the hole in the ground. And it's just one solid straight up pole. And then from the top is suspended a very small surface that a person has been living on for over 25 days.
It's incredible. hoping we could turn now to, there are some politicians that have come out in support of the tree sits and Red, as it's become, like Jamie Lee Curtis
just
went on Twitter and said, I'm with Red. So I'm just curious, can you all comment on this? I mean, what's it like to, you know, go from Green Antifa to all of a sudden, you know, these people are in power, are stepping behind it. What does that mean? And also, you know, what comes next in the struggle?
Yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis, the Activiaist. It's pretty funny. As soon as Washington Post puts out a piece, Jamie Lee Curtis is on top of it. But yeah, it has been really interesting because there were a couple politicians that like attempted to visit Peter's Mountain. I think actually maybe a couple that succeeded, but it was much less popular with lawmakers than Red, which once again, I think is a testimony to, whiteness and wealth as well. But something that I was really interested in is recently, a ton of delegates, lawmakers had a press conference, in which they voiced their support for Red. Sam Rasool also came out and said that he was going, to begin a lawsuit. He was pressing charges against the Department of Environmental Quality for insecurity about the water in the valley where he lives. And I've never seen politicians come out in support of extra legal direct action in this way. And so I think that's been really interesting. And of course you have some lawmakers that come in, and they want to tell you exactly how things need to go. I just want to make a public service announcement for every Facebook comment and person that has recommended that we use a drone to resupply food and water to the sitters. Any drone that can carry over like half a pound has to be registered with the state and is a whole mess, and it is not nearly as easy as it sounds. But yeah, we have people are like, oh, what about a fishing pole? but yeah, we have seen a lot more delegates turn out for Red, and also like begin to speak publicly. And I think a big part of that is the denial of food and water, which we've seen at the Monopod for weeks. And you know, we've had folks arrested for resupplying. But what is really, I think at play with Reds, like I touched on earlier, is that it's like, oh, this woman's land has been in her family for all of these generations, and which, you know, is true, but also folks aren't addressing the indigenous genocide or the enslavement of people that happened in the time when your family was awarded this land or did acquire it. And so that's been really challenging. But also, like I said, this particular, like the messaging of Farmlands Fighting Pipelines and of I Stand With Red and of this beautiful story of this family who saw tree sits go up, studied photos, built tree sits, and just did it, is exposing people to the politic that you'll see, like, with the Peter's Mountain Stand or with the Monopod, and is helping foster an understanding of wealth and whiteness that I don't think is always happening around pipeline struggle, specifically, like, in that region, on that side of resistance.
Yeah, I think it's been really interesting to see the lawmakers, like, again, like, actively come out in support. I would be remiss to not, like, say that I'm worried about it. I think that just, like, the media that, like, we at Three Sisters have intentionally been putting out that is, like, blatantly anti-capitalist and very much like towards like a different way of like viewing resources and viewing the world and viewing the way we like you know relate to each other. Like whenever I see lawmakers or whoever politicians coming out and trying to support something, it almost always leads to a road that will just like continue on like in a cycle of like politics and like status quo. And so when I initially saw that, I was like, interesting. But I really don't have very much hope in these lawmakers or in politicians to like create the worlds that we need and want to see. I think that the folks that are doing that work on the ground are going to be the folks that are leading that charge, not any politician.
I just want to really just emphasize and echo what Jay just said. My initial feelings were about it were like definitely like, okay, this means that this stuff is going to be taken seriously enough that they don't think that they're going to be able to fully just hardline, repress, and squash the actions, they're trying to find ways to find segments of the discourse and segments of the people that are engaged in these sits and these encampments and this overall resistance to the pipelines that have been going on for a few years. And they are trying to set the stage to be able to drive a wedge between those of us that see the struggle against pipelines as the sort of pathway or one of the pathways to new possibilities, a new way of relating to the world, and those that just don't want a pipeline to explode in their backyard. And I think that that those folks are not always mutually exclusive, and people can shift between those kind of two different ways of looking at pipeline struggle. But the very second thought I had was, okay, this means we're powerful, but it also means that we're powerful enough that they want to split us up.
Well, we've been talking for a while, just a few more questions. You know, while this, all this is going on, there's also this big struggle that a lot of people have been talking about at Lazad in France. And I'm just curious, at the same time, a lot of people have been talking about this, and rightfully so. There's all these different pipeline battles happening across the so-called United States and Canada as well. And you know, if you include, you know, land defense struggles and struggles over mega projects and resource extraction, I mean, you know, all over. And I'm just curious, based on your all experiences, what advice would you give to not only make these encampments, bring more people in, but also deepen how radical and subversive they are at the same time?
I think it's a difficult question because it's an ongoing process and an ongoing struggle. I don't think that we're kind of running towards the horizon that is consistently seemingly the same distance away a lot of the time. But I do feel like some lessons I've learned through the course of all of these things is openness and a commitment to being honest about what your stake is, or like why you have drawn to that fight, is at least on a personal or like small group level. As far as like, you know, the so-called radicals versus like the so-called locals, which I think that is a false binary or dichotomy of things that isn't always that clear cut. But I do think that if we think our ideas have some weight, and not that we're right all the time, but that we are what we believe and what our desires are true and are and have validity, that when we approach people with honesty and a sort of like a humble honesty and a humble sort of integrity, and people might not necessarily always receive it well at the outset, but when they start to see that like what we're doing gets results and it feels good to get results, and you can like what we're doing and the way we're doing it can help connect people with their own power that they didn't even know they had, I think people do start to come around. I mean, I have seen folks come a long way around like being, you know, the mask thing is like a kind of good example of like more and more people being okay with masking up because they understand why they do it. And it's not just because like we're a bunch of scary unknown people that just want to like wreak havoc on everything. There's a lot we want to wreak havoc on, but it's not the things that the media likes to or that politicians like to sort of imply that we like to wreak havoc on. And when people start to see how using tactics like that can help them feel more powerful and help them get some of their desires accomplished, I think people will come around, and a lot quicker sometimes than I think we often expect, even myself, who I feel like I've been doing it for a while.
Yeah, I think that here at Three Sisters, again, like, heavy emphasis on political education and also, like, being in solidarity with a lot of different fights that are happening throughout the world. We've been taking a lot of, like, notes and, like, paying a lot of, like, respects to the different movements that, like, we've seen, and really using that to, like, inform, like, how we move, and hoping that doing that, like, in a way that, like, will make sense will, like, lead to us being able to continue to resist and eventually win. And I think that's been, like, the most, like, beautiful part of this is, like, for me personally, like, recognizing that, like, I am, like, one person in a long line of, like, resistance to capitalism and resistance to, like, state repression, and being able to know that, like, I am one of many struggles that are happening right now, and that will, like, continue to happen in whatever, like, way they choose to manifest. And it's, yeah, it's been a very, like, deepening, like, experience in that way.
Yeah, I think to return to something that Jordan said, as far as, like, openness and honesty, I've had a lot of interactions where organizers are speaking to folks that approach them seeking a leadership that sometimes folks aren't, like, both aren't able because of their own capacity, but also don't know the answers to the questions. And, like, being upfront and honest about that and being like, hey, we're just, like, putting one foot in front of the other and trying to figure this out. You know, we've never done this before, has really allowed people to feel okay about taking risk and trying something new, and, like, something that has been the most sustainable for a lot of folks is, like, allowing these kind of, like, regional-based affinity groups to form, who are able to hold things down, who maybe have never participated in direct action before, but being open and honest, like, that this is a tactic that we've never tried or that folks are doing for the first time, is making folks feel powerful in being able to figure out new things. And I'm, like, really excited for and hopeful to see new tactics emerge that are not just resets, which take so much capacity and are so challenging for such a myriad of ways. And I think as far as, like, touching on something that Jay lifted up, is that it is at times of the utmost importance to expand folks' political education, and also figuring out who is willing and able to work with certain folks and how can we really hold and center people of certain identities who don't need to be doing all of that work all of the time. And myself, personally, as a trans person, I hadn't had interactions with young people, 7, 8, you know, 12 years old, who were gendering me properly, and who were respectful, and using the pronouns that I demand. And in, like, meeting folks who hadn't been exposed to, trans folks before, and pushing them and really, like, demanding that they are respectful of folks and that they do analyze, their own whiteness or trans misogyny, has also been really vital in the continuance of this work and the creation of a community where folks do feel trust in one another to be in really high risk, really, at times dangerous situations.
Yeah. I think that, specifically speaking to, like, the challenges that, like, we see here, with, like, you know, we're having a lot of experiences with, intergenerational organizing and multiracial organizing. And, like, it does, like, get, you know, to be very difficult sometimes, like, recognizing that, like, you know, capitalism has, like, and, like, white supremacy have very much, like, poisoned some people's, like, minds. And, like, you know, you've been spoon-fed this ideology, like, all your life. And then, you know, you have somebody who is, like, you know, trying to, like, talk to you about a way of, like, engaging with the world in a way that you've never done that before. And, like, that is, like, a scary thing. And we've been coming up on that a lot on the ACP route, and just, like, trying to, like, think through what it looks like to like engage in like a patient but firm process with folks that is really about like letting people like come to these conclusions on their own. And my hope and my like vision and what I constantly strive for is that like people will be able to see pipeline resistance as, you know, like what it intrinsically is to me, which is gender justice and racial justice and economic justice and all of these things, like that are very much like you're able to like manifest these things through this fight. And just thinking through like what that looks like and like recognizing that it's going to be a long process. But that it is still, it's still necessary work. And that's been like a lot of what, like has been happening here at camp thus far.
Awesome. Well, we've been talking for a little over an hour. Is there anything else that we can touch on that you all want to discuss? You know, this is a dynamic evolving struggle, and I mean, there's just so much to talk about, but is there anything else that we need to hit on that we haven't touched on yet?
So if folks want to check out updates on the Monopod and Peter's Mountain, they can visit and also donate at Apple Actions Against Pipelines on Facebook or Twitter. For to check in on Red, folks can visit Farmlands Fighting Pipelines or I Stand With Red on Facebook or Twitter, where they can also donate. And lastly, to check in on Little Teal Crossing, go to Little Teal Crossing on Facebook, where you can get updates and donate.
Word. And for folks wanting to support resistance on the ACP, Three Sisters Resistance Camp has a Facebook page, an Instagram page at Three Sisters Camp, and a Twitter also at Three Sisters Camp. And folks can donate to Bundly.com/NoPipelinesVA if you're wanting to support camp.
I was just going to add that for keeping up on all pipeline related as well as some other things, news happening in Virginia around a lot of resources extraction stuff, No Pipelines on Instagram is a good one to follow. And that covers, that runs the gamut. And as well as there is a Twitter, Shut It Down RVA, that talks a lot about Richmond and the surrounding region.
The only other resource I would add to that list is End of the Line podcast, which is an anti-pipeline podcast.
Oh, absolutely. I really meant to mention that earlier. Thank you. Incredible.
So just signing off, just to all of you, what does the future hold? You know, next couple weeks, what is happening? What's going to happen?
Great question. I think that the only thing that like we are committed to here at Three Sisters is like continuing to resist, scheming about, you know, what different strategies we're going to be using, and continuing to build with the community here in Buckingham.
Yeah. And along the Mountain Valley Pipeline route, I think really the goal for the next couple of weeks, the next month, is to really dig deep and be creative in finding ways that we can sustain this work. And like materially, as folks are running out of food and water in their sits and being denied access by, like, supporters are no longer allowed to access because of the state's constant presence, really trying to be creative and find ways to help people survive and continue to resist. We're also coming up against a lot of court dates for a lot of folks that have been arrested at different sites for resisting in different ways. And so court support will really be necessary, fundraising for the legal and bail funds. And all of those updates will be coming out on Facebook if folks are interested in rolling through for court.
Yeah, I hope to just see increased gatherings of people to figure out ways that we can creatively resist, even in places that aren't in the direct path of a pipeline, because the front lines truly are everywhere. And I think Standing Rock showed that better than a lot of places. And I think people forget how expansive that struggle was and how many folks actually did solidarity actions against energy transfer partners in various ways throughout the country. So I'm hoping to see more of that.
Are there any plans for like large scale mobilizations of people just to go out to the land and be there or anything like that?
I think for the various sites along the route, that as a strategy, like very well may become necessary in the future. And I'm personally really excited to see how folks take hold of that and figure out ways to make that happen. Yeah, absolutely. I think that it'll become necessary for us to like continue to sustain the folks that are living in trees.
Awesome. Well, this has been an amazing discussion. It's an amazing struggle. It's, you know, it's, you know, it's just been very intense to see this blow up. You know, I remember when we first started publishing stuff and putting up interviews on It's Going Down, and then all of a sudden it's, you know, it's all over the media. It's a huge story, and it's, you know, it's been very inspiring to see everything grow, and we wish you all the best.
Thanks so much for having us on. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, this is really great.
Yeah, thank you. No more pipelines.